Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everyone. It is Anita from She and Her. Happy summer. I am introducing you to our mini summer series. We've been in the studios of WHUP this summer, catching up, playing music, and talking about what's going on in our lives. And we wanted to invite you into some of those conversations as a mini summer bonus series as we are in between seasons. So think of these two episodes as you just hanging out with us and eavesdropping on our conversations. We're really excited to get back to you with new content in the fall. But until then, hope you're having a wonderful summer. Let us know what you're up to, and we'll talk to you soon. Enjoy the episodes. Hey, Anita.
Hey.
We're just catching up live on the air. Sandra did a cool event today that I'm excited to hear about, meeting with various journalists covering the Latinx community.
Reproductive justice. So I went, yes. So someone from El Pueblo reached out to us through She and Her and wanted to bring together a group of journalists and communication specialists who have addressed reproductive justice topically,
okay,
in their content or do so in their nonprofit work. So I was there. There were two women from Advance NC, who apparently all month, they're doing a full month of coverage solely on reproductive justice in North Carolina.
Oh, cool.
Right now. There was a woman from the ACLU. And there was a guy, Emilio Vicente, from Familia Trans Queer something and something.
But yes.
They do organizing, I think, in the Latinx community around sexuality. And
he's amazing. He was in SLY way back when.
He told me he'd met you, and he thought it was through that.
That's cool.
And he said hello.
Aw.
So basically, the person who facilitated the panel just was asking us how we approach in our work talking about women's health care. Have we done any stories around reproductive health care? What are some of the challenges of covering that topic? And it was really interesting to hear people's different perspective
because
the Advance NC women who have a publication that's, they only publish stories written by women.
So is it, it's a nonprofit that has a publication arm?
Okay. And they were saying right now when they've been preparing for this month-long series on reproductive justice, they've really had to strategize around trolls. So that's been a huge part of their preparation.
Wow, yeah.
And then, you know, the woman from the ACLU was basically like, we're just on the defense so much right now. So it's kind of exhausting. And then I just talked about how on our show, what we do is just try to provide a platform because we, you know, strive to remain objective. We provide a platform that allow women to truthfully, honestly, and safely talk about the choices that they make in any number of areas in their life. Like I talked about how we had a woman on there who was, you know, undocumented.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started thinking about it. I was like, you know, we've never done an abortion show.
No. I think we've talked about doing that but we don't think we ever explicitly have.
No, but we've done a lot of shows around motherhood.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about your sister's show.
Yeah.
She talked about her miscarriage.
The period show.
The period show. Tina Haver-Curran.
That's right.
The Saturday Chores. She did that. So I was like putting those all together. I was like, oh, I guess we have kind of come at this.
And the pubic hair. Topically. Like in the way that she talked about sexual education.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it made me also think about bringing on Ariel from my hometown, who she has chose to keep her child when she was pregnant at 16.
Yeah.
So.
That's really cool. Who was it who attended?
I wish that I had a chance to be there at the very beginning because they didn't. Like, they just dove right into my panel, and I got there, like, 10 minutes before.
So it was part of, like, a bigger conference or something?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Very cool.
So, but I walked in on this conversation where this one woman who was a participant was asking another someone on a different panel there who worked. I'd have to look this organization up, but it's an organization that is fully staffed and run by trans people, and they work with trans people who've had abortions.
Wow.
And I was like, wow, that must be so fascinating and interesting to learn about, and I'd have so many questions. And this lady was asking, like, we struggle to talk about just abortion and reproductive justice in our work generally, and then when you add the layer of LGBTQ language, it can be super confusing, and I'm just so scared I'm always going to mess it up.
Hmm.
And the person from that organization was like, I just so appreciate you being honest about that. I totally understand. And it was a really nice moment to walk
That's
in
cool.
on. But, and then another one of the questions that the facilitator asked specifically for the Latinx panelists that I was talking with was, what are some of the cultural challenges that you have in your work, like with the Latin community, talking about this? And the woman from the ACLU was just talking about how, like, the, in the Latin, in her experience, if you got pregnant and you don't want to keep the baby, well, you just shouldn't have had sex.
Mm.
And that's just the way that it is.
Yeah.
And then, your friend Emilio, he was talking about how he's like, look at this room. The only men in this room are me and the facilitator. It's all women.
Mm.
And it's so challenging to make this issue in this community a men's issue.
Yes.
But it was so cool because I had, like, headphones on, so there was active translating going on the whole time because half of it was conducted in Spanish.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yes.
That's awesome. That organization is really incredible. Like, I feel like William is
yes.
that his name? Yeah, he's, like, really on it.
Yes.
I appreciate that.
So tell us about your day, though, because you had a busy day, too. Like, a big day, I would
Today
say.
Today was Signif. So we launched a new series that we're doing while I'm hosting called Embodied. It was fun. It was, like, really crazy because everyone, aside from one guest, was in studio today. But then the one guest who was not in studio was at Virginia Beach, apparently, in a beach house with 26 people.
Whoa.
And so we were very explicit with her, like, you must kick them all out of the beach house so you can be alone. But then apparently, since there's nothing, like, there's no real landlines anymore, everything is, like, whatever, VOIP or... Anyways, I can, like, internet interference can affect the quality of the line. So clearly someone was, like, streaming something on Netflix. So her sound was just not good. So halfway through the first segment, I was panicking because I could, like, there were dropouts and she was my only guest. So I basically, like, made someone who wasn't coming on till later, like, come into the studio, and then they, like, canceled this woman and called her back on her cell phone. So it was, like, a little bit chaotic.
So, Anita, yes. I don't think you said this, or maybe you said this at the top, but you're guest hosting the State of
yes.
Things for a month.
And for a month.
And this Embodied series is a special series within that whole month of you hosting
exactly.
while Frank is out of town.
Yes.
And why don't you tell us about the topic that you addressed today and what each guest background in relationship to the topic was.
Sure. So, today was about sex ed in North Carolina. Its history, what it looks like in the classroom now. And then kind of people exploring how to teach sex ed in, like, alternative ways. So we started with a woman. So first of all, crazy. I really didn't know much about sex ed in North Carolina until the show. So up until 2009, it was abstinence only education in North Carolina.
That's my experience.
Yeah. As of 2009, the legislature passed the Healthy Youth Act, which said it's abstinence first, but sex ed must also include descriptions of like FDA approved contraception, accurate information about STIs, some stuff about healthy relationships, but it's essentially up to individual districts to choose how to design their curriculum and how it's implemented. So the first person we talked with is a researcher who basically looked at, okay, this happened in 2009. What is it looking like on the ground? And she basically found that it's like totally haphazard. Some schools hadn't even heard of the Healthy Youth Act.
Wow. Oh, God.
There used to be this thing, there was funding for this thing called the Healthy Living Coordinator, whose job it is essentially is like to coordinate on a district level, like what the curriculum is and how it's being implemented. The funding for that has gone totally out the window. So there were some places where it was literally like a gym teacher trying to do a condom demonstration, and then other places like in the Triangle where it's like this fully, you know, well-developed, very comprehensive curriculum. So it's like even if, you know, state law is, this is what it is, it looks totally different. There's no follow-up. There's no real teeth to the law. So she essentially found like it looks drastically different wherever you are. And essentially what's happening is on a county-by-county level, particular, there's no, like, there's a thumb drive that the State Department of Education gives to people with, like, information and slides.
Oh my
but sometimes
God.
Schools are allowing religious organizations to come in and essentially be the ones to program and facilitate the sex
content.
Ed in
wow.
classrooms. So it's, I mean, it's just like super haphazard. So she was kind of giving us an overview of her research and what she found. And then we transitioned to talk with this woman who works at Shift NC, which is kind of the primary organization that the state contracts to support sex ed in the state. And she was kind of giving us a sense of overall trends and the numbers and the challenges, which is basically in the past couple of years, there have been these really vocal minorities of parents who want more local control over what schools are teaching, who are protesting the inclusion of any LGBTQ-related content in sex ed curriculum, and who are trying to change the system from... So right now in North Carolina, as a parent, you have the choice to opt your kid out of sex ed at any point. But the way it works is your kids are sent home with a permission slip, and the default is that if you don't return the permission slip, you're defaulted in. Legislators are trying to change the system so that...
The reverse. They're actively trying to change
it? So there was a bill that was passed a couple of months ago, and apparently, as of right now, it hasn't really moved or had much legs, but there's kind of this, like, growing movement to do that, and all kind of under the guise of why shouldn't parents have more control? Why shouldn't, and what Elizabeth will say is like, listen, if you really don't want your kid to have
just
this education,
no, on the form.
Right. But the kids that this ends up hurting, it's kids whose parents work an overnight shift. You know, like it ends up hurting the people who are like most vulnerable and most need this education.
If they were to flip the way that it works.
Exactly. And so then we had a sex educator come in.
That is a straight up asinine waste of time.
I know. And then they're trying to create this new elaborate system where there are like county level advisory boards where anytime you want to introduce new things to the sex ed curriculum or redesign it, you have to have a hearing on a county level where there's all of this kind of like weigh in. And what Elizabeth will say, she's like, listen, we do surveys and like 90% of parents want their kids to learn about sex ed in school. Parents don't actually want to teach them because they don't feel like they have accurate information. They're freaked out. And if you look at the numbers, 40% of North Carolina high schoolers have had sex.
Wow.
And 30% are actively having sex. So, like, people are having sex.
100% of them will.
Exactly. And all of the data proves that getting sex ed does not make you more likely to have sex. So it's like, there's just like, the science is not there to back any of this up. So then we had this woman from Columbus County. It's super interesting. So she grew up in Columbus County. She's
is
a black.
Eastern?
Yes.
Rural.
Yeah, Eastern. Rural, southeastern.
Okay.
A black woman grew up in Columbus County in absence only sex ed, and then now has kind of worked her way into working for the health department and working for the school system to do sex ed. Started in faith communities and now is in classrooms, and like the teen pregnancy rate has dropped, I think, 13% since
wow.
she started. And so she talked a bit about kind of what's in the classroom, and I asked them some questions toward the end about like the internet has changed so much. Like, you can see porn, you can whatever. And so, like, part of sex ed needs to be, like, porn literacy and thinking about. But how it's, like, when you're still on a statewide level fighting the fight to even have not it. Just do abstinence only. It's just, right. like, it's absurd.
Oh, it's so absurd.
And that there's pushback when you do LGBTQIA inclusive stuff. So that was the whole B segment. And then in the C, we talked... this was a bit of an adventure. So there's the Women's Theater Festival happening in Raleigh this weekend. And one of the plays was written by a 21-year-old. And it's about, like, sexual awakening among a group of young girls in a Catholic boarding school. And told through the perspective of, like, this rebellious girl who comes in, who's from public schools, and... she comes in to meet all these kids who won't even use tampons because the nuns have told them they can't use them.
Wow.
And she decides that she's going to teach them about, like, pleasure and masturbation. So originally, the scene that they had prepared to do, thank God we got it yesterday because it was, like, so not public radio friendly. So we changed the scene. But so she did that scene and just started talking about her clitoris and pleasure. And then this woman was in there who was talking about a curriculum she's designed to do, like, interactive theater in schools. So yeah, it was fun. It was very lively.
I bet it was.
Yeah.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
But so Thrive came up at the thing I was at today.
Thrive. Shift. Thrive.
Shift.
Yeah.
It did.
Yeah. They're doing a lot. Yeah. They're like the major player in this game in the state. And this woman was so, I mean, it's just so interesting when you look at the numbers. It's like it makes any arguments for abstinence only sex education make
zero sense. I mean, it is, I don't really even fundamentally see the logic. Like, I kind of get it, and that, like, maybe parent, only because I'm so sure I would put every dollar in my bank account on this bet, that the people who don't want their kids to get abstinence, who want them only to get that at school and don't want that to be talked about at school, are not, I would bet 90% of them aren't talking about that with their kids. No. Other than saying, like, just don't have sex.
Exactly. But 90% of Americans have had sex before marriage.
Wow.
Like, even, you know, like, married Americans.
Married. Okay. Really?
Yeah.
What about that other 10%?
I don't know. I'm sure they have. But it's, like, statistically, it's more interesting that, like, they have, you know, like, they are married and they say that they had sex before they got married.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I see what you mean.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's just...
Do you have any other embodied topics that you are going to...
Yeah. Yeah, we have all four. So I'm hosting for 4 weeks, and we're going to do them every Thursday.
What are some of the
next
topics?
Week is fertility.
Oh, nice.
So we're going to be talking about the science and technology of fertility. We're going to be talking with a woman, Belle Boggs. She's a writer who's written about her own experience of infertility and kind of the history of the eugenics movement in North Carolina and, like, state policy around fertility. A black woman who's actually Mrs. North Carolina, I think, who has, like, really struggled with her own fertility and multiple miscarriages and kind of made that a part of her platform and talked about how we think of fertility is a white woman's problem. Someone that looks at, like, the social or the psychological ramifications of infertility, and then a woman who looks at men's infertility and the kind of silent the silent, like, groups that are silenced in this conversation, including, like, LGBTQ people. So apparently, like, to get insurance to cover your fertility treatment, if you're a hetero couple, you have to prove you've, like, tried for X amount of time unsuccessfully. As a queer couple, you have to prove that you've, like, it's basically like you have to have spent an absurd amount of money already on treatment that hasn't worked.
Wow.
And so they talk about, like, how we don't, there's just no existing kind of mechanism to be, to think about
that
queer fertility. So that's next week. And then we're going to talk about the science of sex, I think, and looking at, like, how little, basically that book, there's this book called Come As You Are that's all about, like, women's sexuality and how little we know about, like, the actual biology of our sex and reproductive organs. Mm. And then we're going to talk about aging and relationships. So, like,
nice.
How relationships change as you age.
I love that.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So it's going to be fun, I think. It's, yeah, I'm curious to see what the reception is.
Me too. You're spicing it up over there, guys, yeah, for sure.
Week one, really just, it's hilarious too, because at the end of the week, we always, like, go over our demographic numbers and look back at the week, and it, like, we're having to make a really concerted effort to book white men while I'm hosting, and it's cracking me up.
Oh my gosh.
Because that's, you know, and it's just like you realize, like, wow, it really does make a difference who's sitting in the host seat, like, based on, like, the topics they prioritize and then the topics that I'm encouraging people and then the people that the producers think that I'll have rapport with on the air. And it's just like this week, I think we only have, we've had two white men out of, like, 15 guests.
Hey. Well, we, so at the very last question that they asked on the panel today was, what gives you hope? And I was talking, I said that, you know, tracking the U.S. women's soccer team and how vocal they have been about their disenfranchisement within the league because of their gender, and how quickly the fans and the audiences have latched on to that and echoed that and amplified that message. And then I talked about how the New York Times is doing those obituaries where they are revisiting people that they never covered in their obit section that they should have, people, women, people who are from the LGBT community, or people of color. And then I was like, and also Anita, for instance, is doing this series on the state of things about sex and bodies. And I talked about the short film that won the Oscar this year that was about periods.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like there is more and more consensus and coverage and volume on just women's voices and women's stories. And
yeah.
I think that is encouraging to me.
It's so funny because as I was, like, Googling around on NPR yesterday just to see, like, what existed about sex coverage. And apparently in March they did this 8-part series on All Things Considered called Let's Talk About Sex. And it was, like, 8 different features. One of them looked at, like, what the kink community can teach us about consent.
Yeah, I heard that one.
One of them looked at, like, porn and the effect of porn on how we think about sex. One of them profiled a couple who waited until they were married to have sex. But the first thing that came up when I was looking through the series was this 2-page-long post that the NPR, like, editorial board had to write in response to all of the feedback that they got, which was like, I cannot believe you are devoting this much airtime to talking about this. I was like, oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
If we calculate the total amount of airtime, that's 64 minutes of airtime over, like, more than a month.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think it's great. I think it's bold. I think we have to be bold. Because just talking about it is pushing the needle forward,
exactly,
as far as I'm concerned. And you can't not talk about it. I had this experience. We ran a story this week on Come Here North Carolina, an interview I did with Laura Balance and Mac McCon for from Merge Records and Superchunk, and there was I always have to run these edited interviews that I do up the chain of command because I work for state government and they have to be approved before they go to public. And there was a a point in there where I'd asked both of them what made North Carolina a great community for them to have Merge Records and make music. And Mac McConn was talking about how, you know, they started as a punk rock and roll band in the 80s, and at that time a lot of punk bands were protesting Ronald Reagan, but we had our very own homegrown Jesse Helms to protest. And I was really surprised at how afraid I was that, like, we wouldn't get to run that.
Really?
I did. And and my director was like, no, we can put that in there. But I just don't know, because people are so cautious about, you know, saying anything bad about anybody.
Mm-hmm.
When I, like, at least in the universe that I work in, you have to be so careful because we are funded by the legislature and mm-hmm. we are in budget season right now and we don't know what our budget is going to be. So it's just, and one of the things that came up in that panel today was, like, the Will from El Playboy was talking about how they've just had to be more and more explicit about the problems that their community and their constituents face, because he's like, you know, we used to write press releases and, like, no, like, we deserve rights. Like, we're good people, da-da-da-da-da. And now it's like, no, it's xenophobic and racist to da-da-da-da-da. And I was just thinking about the need. Well, my God, here I am making a political correctness point. I think that's where I'm headed.
Yeah.
And I do feel like there's a kernel of truth to that. But I think that we should feel that way about things like sex education and
well, I think it's hard because you feel, and I was struggling with this in the lead up to the show today, like this, it's this push pull between feeling like we need to sound balanced in order for people to take us seriously. And I think that, like, I think it's true that, like, something that good journalism does well is help you develop empathy for people who think really differently from you. But in this conversation about sex ed, it was like we were reaching out to various stakeholders. And no one, and it's like the voice that I was hoping to hear from was like a very thoughtful, balanced parent who would come on and say, like, share why they felt uncomfortable with their kid getting this education. But it's like no one is willing to talk like that. The people that are willing to talk are these like firebrand legislators. Well, they didn't even want to talk because they were in the middle of budget season, who are like advocating for these policies that are so, I don't know, that just, like, change the conversation in a way that doesn't even make sense. And it's like, well, it would be unfair to spend 6 out of 20 minutes talking about this opt-out legislation when that's so far from the reality of, like,
yes,
what's going on. But it's like, yes, it's this question of how do you provide balance and be fair while also not allowing, like, something so radical to distract you from
the reality. Well, and it's like that NPR series where people, they had to write, the editors had to write a note about it. It's like, it just probably feels unfair or shocking or unbalanced by simply existing.
Exactly.
It's not even what they're saying. Exactly. It's the fact that it's existing and it's being said. That in and of itself, I feel like, is, you know, an alarm for a lot of people.
Right. And in an environment where there are people who don't feel like their kids should learn about LGBTQ. Or that's not even it. The people who feel like teaching LGBTQ kids how to feel safe when they have sex is a problem. Like, how do you, am I supposed to provide pushback on that? Like,
right.
You know, it's
right.
Like,
right.
It's really, yeah, it's very tricky. And it's like the whole, especially with like political coverage with the Trump, I was thinking about this tomorrow. We do this like segment every other Friday with Ken Rudin, our political junkie, and we pick like 4 or 5 topics to talk about. And when I was going through, it was like the topics that we were triaging today, like, were changing every 30 minutes, like, based off of like the latest news. And I was thinking about this, like, wait a second. If we're allowing, it's like allowing Trump's decision to hold a press conference to say, like, okay, I'm going to give up on my fight to pursue the census question, if like that takes priority over them announcing that they're going to have these ICE raids, it's like, wait a second. No, I mean, like, for Ken, he can't really talk about the ICE raid, so whatever, separate question. But yeah, like, that, it was that from based on that Call Your Girlfriend episode, they talked about like this distraction tactic. Yes. And yes. How
it scatters the narrative.
It does. It scatters the message. And you have no sense of what to focus on, because if you're just focusing on what is the latest news, like objectively what happened most recently,
yes,
you're not going to focus on what's actually the most important story that has yes. the biggest impact on people's lives.
I heard the tail end of an interview with a principal, I guess, who is the principal of a school in a northeastern state that must have a lot of undocumented kids in mm-hmm. it. And she herself has a green card, but she, you know, she still feels like she's at risk. And her son has been asking her what's going to happen to her. Her son has citizenship. But so the reporter, it was The World.
Uh-huh.
I love that anchor. I can't remember his name, but
Marco Werman.
Yes, he asked her. He's like, "Well, do you really feel like you're going to be okay?" Because that's what she's been telling her son, and she paused for a long time. And she's like, "I mean, if I'm being honest, I think it's way more serious than that, because I've put everything on the line."
Mm.
And I was like, "She really has."
Yeah.
I mean, and that's one of those. But like, to me, that's the real story. Like, the citizenship question obviously is a huge question and it's a big issue, but something's about to happen next week that is going to ruin people's lives.
Right.
You know, or dramatically change people's lives.
Okay, well.
Great chat.
We really covered it all. I'm going to play. So, do you know Kaique Vidal? Do you know mm-hmm. this guy? Ugh, I'm obsessed. So he's Brazilian. He moved to Durham in 2009 for love. He met a woman named Joy when he was playing a concert and just like sang a love song to her, and then she responded and whatever. They've been living in Durham since 2009. He has a band and a drum group that practices every week at Durham Central Park, and they released their first EP last year. And I really like his music, so we'll play you all a little bit of that. Usambo diferente. Enjoy.
Nailed it.
Olha o batuque vai fazendo seu sambinha, mas eu não vejo você. Eu sou diferente. Mas tudo bem, isso pode até ser samba, mas é frio. Sambe comigo que meu samba fica quente. Olha o batuque vai fazendo esse sambinha, mas eu não vejo você. Eu sambo diferente, minha princesa. Mas tudo bem, isso pode até ser samba, mas é frio. Sambe comigo que meu samba fica quente. Que estranho, quando eu não vejo você, eu sambo diferente.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.